This is CliffCentral.com.
Yes, good morning, everybody. What's happening? It's Thursday morning. We've got a burning platform later on brought to you by Nando's. Everybody loves that. And today's going to be slightly different. What's wrong, Sia? Did you suddenly look at yourself and find out that you felt fat? Or he's touching himself in the front.
I just nearly popped out of my shirt.
Oh,
yeah.
Packing on the kilos, huh?
Button nearly went flying.
Uh-oh.
Just such is life on a Thursday morning.
Not good, Sia. What are we going to do with you? Let yourself go?
I'm going to have to cancel my lunch of a block of cheese.
I just want to mention something that's happened here. You know, I occasionally like to refer to some of the stuff that goes on behind the scenes at CliffCentral.com. So we have this enormous storeroom. It's easily one of the biggest rooms in the whole place. And it has been a clusterfuck of epic proportions for the last 4.5 years. So much so. Look, I went in there once or twice and I tried to tidy up and I just got zero interest from...
Bless you. There we go.
I start sneezing when I think of that storeroom because it was so filthy. Anyway, I got zero interest from anyone and everybody said, don't worry. Greg was like, we're still tidying it up and we've got things to do. We got to move this. And there's like boxes of crap there and old broken furniture. And so we hired Pinky Mokomane, we've known Pinky for a long time. I knew her when she was studying at Free State University. And she's qualified in law and she's way too... too smart. She's been caught. She shouldn't be worrying about our office. But she came in here a couple of weeks ago, and I've introduced you to her a couple of times. Hey, Pinky.
Hey, Gareth.
So she just grabbed this thing by the horns, and we now have the most beautifully tidy, sexy little storeroom that I've ever seen in my life. It is. I mean, I went in there yesterday for no good reason other than to just marvel at how clean it was.
Did you really?
I did. And yesterday... Now, Jane is, Jane runs the office here, and she's probably, she can be, she's got a huge personality, right? And Jane kind of takes everything as it comes, and she can handle just about anything. And poor Jane wasn't here yesterday because she had to deal with all those riots and Alex.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there was a service delivery protest, and no one could get in or out of Alex. Apparently, even the Gautrain couldn't stop at Marlborough. It was just a mess. Police were called, the MECs were all running around there as well. It was just crazy. So, Jane wasn't here yesterday. I find Pinky is like busy sorting out. She's doing her job and she's doing Jane's job. And I have never seen the place look as tidy and organized and clean as it is. Because, Jane is a lot of things, but she's a great cleaner, she is not.
How crazy.
So, yeah. Pinky's taken over all that stuff. She may even end up taking over my job, so I'm just warning you now. The way that she operates, it won't be long before Pinky's running the show here, and then it'll be called the Pinky Mokemane Show.
What, watch. Pinky, what does your email signature say as we stand?
It's currently project manager.
Yeah, it's going to be, watch. Just watch. She's going to be like grand overlord of everything soon. It's going to happen.
That sounds apt enough, yeah.
And today we've got a big... What is it? Like a team building session, like a strategy session for the team going forward. And it's very exciting because it means everybody's going to have a chance to have a say about where we're going. This is the core team, taking the place forward. And now we're 5 years old next month. It's a big deal. Yeah, very important. And it's going to be interesting because everybody's going to figure out where they fit into the scheme of things. So that's very exciting. I thought I'd share some of the background stuff with you this morning.
And no fights? Currently having no fights in the office?
Well, as far as I know, but there's always some undercurrent between person A and person X and person B and person D.
Well, Ben and Gord at this point, sense. We don't.
Come on.
We can't do that with ourselves. No, yeah, really. No.
I got a really interesting WhatsApp yesterday from somebody. It's this woman. It's a Zimbabwean woman. I'm not sure who she is. Did anyone else get this? It actually came up on the screen this morning as well, here in the studio, which means someone must have sent it to 0797482090. Mm-hmm. She's obviously some kind of political activist. A Zimbabwean woman. She's got the Zimbabwean flag in the background, and she's talking about the situation, because now we've got these new outbreaks of xenophobia in Durban. I heard in Alex yesterday there were people complaining about foreign nationals building their shacks. You know, there's suddenly this undercurrent. This always happens when the economy isn't great. People turn on each other.
And people just want the easiest place to point a finger.
Correct. So, and what do? Because the people who are pointing the fingers are not very strong people themselves, they point the finger at people who are weaker than them. In other words, people who don't have the same protection under the law. Mm. And I mean, we say in our constitution that we're a country of equal rights. I mean, you know, Pinky's probably more smart about this stuff than I am. But we say that anyone who lives in this country is able to access the law equally. I mean, that's how it should be. And even if you're an illegal immigrant, you have certain rights, right?
That's true.
Yeah, so you would think that this would be uncontroversial, but a lot of these illegal immigrants, because they don't have papers, they get victimized by the police, they get victimized by the community, and they have nowhere to turn. They can't go, like you and I, if something happens to us, we can go and report it to the police, or we can go to the courts and we can use them to our advantage to try and restitute whatever's happened. But these illegal immigrants have got nowhere to go. So, of course, they're weaker. And a lot of them are the people who are brave enough to open up little spaza shops and little trading posts inside the townships. And so they're being victimized by the people who live in those communities, even though they're the ones supplying the goods to those communities. Because the local residents look at them and go, how come you're doing well and I'm not? You know, it's just classic resentment. Resentment 101.
Which just, yeah, it's unfortunate that things have to reach this point,
well,
really.
It's very sad. So this woman is from Zim, and she basically gave her own appraisal of what she reckons the real underlying problem is. And this is pretty controversial, but it might be interesting for you to hear. So it's about 2 minutes. I'm just going to play a part of it and let you hear it. All right, listen.
So Mr. Ramaphosa, in one of his election campaign speeches, decided to declare war on foreigners, saying that the South African government is going to hammer down on foreigners in the country and that things are about to become tougher. What Mr. Ramaphosa does not tell South Africans is that he and the ANC are part of the problem. They continue to prop up a ZANU-PF government in Zimbabwe by protecting them and pretending that the killings are not happening, that the raping of our children is not happening. Every time that the international community has wanted to come forward and intervene, it has been ANC that has stopped that from happening. ZANU-PF has not won elections since the 2000s, and we as Zimbabweans do not want ZANU-PF anymore. In 2008, ZANU-PF lost elections, and ANC sent Mbeki to say, no, Mugabe is not going anywhere.
Of course, she's 100% right here in that the ANC have backed the ZANU-PF government regardless. And every time that Zimbabweans have gone to the polls to say we want a different government so that they can stabilize their ridiculously out-of-control country and their out-of-control economy and their horrendous currency, which is no longer worth anything. I don't think anyone carries a Zimbabwean currency note anywhere because it's just a joke, right? You can't buy anything with it. They've been using the US dollar for, 6 years? Maybe more. Maybe even 8 years. So she's 100% correct. The ANC are more interested in propping up their friends in ZANU-PF and victimizing the people of Zimbabwe and then complaining about when foreign nationals come here because they've got no option than they are in bringing real change. And the same thing is going on here. The ANC is hurting poor people in South Africa by ruining the economy, which they've done comprehensively. By ruining parastatals, they've done that comprehensively. The ANC is more interested in keeping themselves in power. And you can see on this election campaign trail, I've watched a couple of the news updates on what the ANC are doing, who's going around and talking, you know, Cyril's doing these things. So they have nothing to promise.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing that, because everything that they're going to promise, we're going to say, oh, you tried that and failed.
Let's look at the 25-year track record.
Well, that's it. So I was invited, and I shouldn't maybe even share this, but I'm going to anyway. What the hell? I was invited to a talk that Cyril Ramaphosa was giving. Now, when you get invited to something with the president, you usually go.
Right.
Right. So it's this poster that says, conversation with the ANC president. And I think it's happening today.
Oh.
Meeting with our white compatriots, building bridges with the ANC. So I'm, first of all, I don't like being invited because I'm white to anything. That's a bad way to invite me. If you invite me as a white person, I'm really not going to come. But to say it like that is so patronizing as well.
Compatriots.
So, you know, yeah, I mean, like our white compatriots. Like, why don't just say, we'd love to talk to you, or come and join us in a conversation with the president. So that irritated me straight off the bat. But they're doing this somewhere in Sandton. So the guy who sends it to me, who's a big ANC supporter, is a friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
I like him. I get along with him. He's got a nice wife. He's got a nice take on most things. He's a very smart guy. He says, come on, get your backside over there and ask him any question you like. No moaning that the ANC doesn't give you an opportunity to engage. And there's this ridiculous picture of Cyril, like, smiling, but he looks like he's laughing at you. Anyway, so...
like they're trying to
so my, do that. My response to him was, ugh, okay? Now, I know I'm a difficult guy. I don't go anywhere. I don't accept invitations. But this is an invitation to meet with the president, and I could not find it in myself to go for any good reason. Like, I don't want to meet the president. I don't have any reason to talk to him. So I said, I don't want platitudes. This is my response to the guy who invited me. I don't want platitudes. I doubt there's much that he could say to give me confidence in anything about his party or his administration.
Mm.
I'm digging deep and there's nothing. Engaging with this guy is unimportant to me. So I don't know if maybe, am I full of shit? Should I go and listen to the president talk and maybe ask him a few questions? Because I don't think he's going to give me any answers that are going to count.
And what?
Like if he was in here now for an interview, I wouldn't know what to ask him. I'd say to him, how are you even brave enough to show your face as the head of an administration that has presided over ruination? I mean, like, what else can I say to him? And then it's going to sound like I'm being combative. But what have they got to show?
Well, here I am thinking that the operative term in this case is say. We're done hearing you say anything. There's lots that you have to do.
I'm so done, I'm not even going. That's how done I am.
And I was thinking about it since the other day when you raised this with me the first time, and I thought, yeah, should he, shouldn't he, what should he say? Was he wrong in how you responded? And no, I really don't think you were.
Anyway, I mean, it's only for white people, so I could have sent you, but, you know, you're white.
No, sorry, I'm not one of the white...
what a stupid thing to do, to invite people as white compatriots. It's like having a meeting saying, well, only the coloureds are coming. This is for the coloureds. I mean, you know, as politicians, you should be brave enough and wise enough to understand that you try to disguise that a little bit. You don't make it obvious that you're reaching out to the whites or the blacks or the coloureds or the Indians. All that does is entrench pervert stuff, you know?
Well, it's... they're all taking from the same notebook because, yeah. I mean, yesterday we were talking about the EFF and Julius Malema essentially saying that, you know, there's white money and, you know, white billions. And so clearly you white compatriots were having meetings beforehand.
Well, obviously.
So now they think...
I, by the way, I just want to say...
let's just have the guest speaker.
Somehow I didn't get those invitations, but I got this one.
Yeah, you know, if we had to look at these things, there are certain key things that I missed out on the black race too. So,
yeah, I don't know what's going on here. But don't, please don't do something with me or interact with me or engage with me because I'm white, because that really irritates me. Like, I never, ever want to belong to a race. I don't like it. I don't like what it means. I don't like the stereotypes associated with it. It does nothing for me as an individual. I am not proud or embarrassed by white people. I don't care. The fact that you're white and I'm white is purely a circumstance of our melanin count. I have no attachment to other white people. I don't care. I'm not interested. I really don't. Just because I see someone in the street and they happen to be white doesn't mean I feel better about them or worse than them than I do about a black person. I don't know how else to say it.
Mm.
And if you invite me on that basis, I'm just immediately put off.
But that's the... let's not confuse things. That was the secondary issue.
No,
with
I
the
know.
Cyril case.
I know, but that,
the Cyril case
just annoyed
bigger.
Me. It's like when Phumzile Van Damme the other day was talking about, oh, the DA is now 51.1% of our caucus is black. Like, why would why would you think that would be interesting to me or to anyone else for that matter? And if people are interested in that, then what they're interested in is racial solidarity, and you take that one step further and it's just racism. There's no other reason.
Well, it clearly matters to them, and I still don't think it's enough of a number to bang your chest on.
Well, exactly. I mean, first of all, you're boasting about something that's like one percentage point, which is ridiculous. I mean, I know the DA is hunting for scraps at this point because they're probably going to shrink at the polls. So they need any kind of show that they've gone up a percent or two somewhere.
Mm.
But then to make it about like how many black people you've got in your parliamentary caucus is kind of a bit sad. Because what are you saying? You're saying, what, we're a white party that's trying to look black, or we're finally a black party? Why would you say that stuff if you're a non-racial party? Like half the reason I'm willing to bet that the black and white people who support the DA support the DA is because they used to think it was a non-racial party. They're like, well, we've got bigger things to do than worry about race. We got to worry about building the economy, getting people jobs, fixing the infrastructure, delivery of services. Those would be things that everyone's interested in. And then Cyril's inviting the whites and the DA's boasting about their blacks. It's just so stupid. It's so puerile. And I know that we've got a country of dumb people. I know that. Oh, we've got a country of really stupid. No, we are the stupidest country in Africa. This is not my opinion. This is a fact. And this probably is the source of some of our xenophobia as well, I'd be willing to say. Especially against Zimbabweans, who are supremely educated people. Zimbabweans are some of the most well-educated people in the continent and possibly even the world, which is why they get jobs and make it feel to South Africans like they're not getting jobs. I know hugely competent Zimbabwean people who've had to fight for months with Home Affairs to get work permits and the ability to just eke out a living. I mean, people with master's degrees. I'm not talking about run-of-the-mill matric graduates from Angie Mocheha's School of Substandard Qualifications. You know, I'm not talking about all those people that we pretend to care about once a year when the matric results come out. You want some truth? This is what you got to face. We celebrate people passing a very average matric. A matric that, honestly, if you had if you'd been hit in the head really hard with a metal stick about 20 times, you could still pass that matric. It's not an achievement. And we think about Angie, and we think about how that whole department with their outcomes-based education has just basically they've stultified South African youth, which is why they're not, as I've said before, unemployed. They're unemployable. And then Angie and her people go, well, you know, we've done this is the best job we could possibly. It pass rates at what, 80%? Yeah, because you've just lowered down the. You have to get 30% or something for maths.
Oh yeah.
To pass on higher grade? Are you kidding me? Are
30% for maths, 40% for science?
Even I, who am shit at maths, managed to pass it above 60% on higher grade. And for me, that was hard. I had to struggle to get there. 30%? You could walk into that thing without picking up a book and get 30%. You could throw darts at a board and you'd score 30%. Anyway, we then have a problem with Zimbabweans who come in here because they've got proper education, right? Come in, their school system still works, their universities, up to a short while ago, used to give decent qualifications to people. And they come into South Africa and they're like, well, here's my CV and it's full of qualifications.
Yeah, and experience, proper work. I mean,
there are Uber drivers in South Africa who've got out of Zimbabwe who are doctors. I met a guy the other day who's like a science graduate and he's driving an Uber. But he's doing what he can to make a living, right? And we've got people in Alex and in Kwamashu who are attacking these people. Are you insane? Julius was right when we played that clip yesterday where he said, yeah, this is about your insecurities, because that's exactly what it is. If you're attacking a foreign national because they've got a job and you haven't, that's because you feel like a loser deep down inside. And instead of taking it out on the government that you should take it out on because they haven't provided opportunities for you, you take it out on someone weaker than you, which is standard abuse. This is the same reason we have woman abuse in this country, because men take it out on women. Because women don't fight as hard. And they take it out on children because children can't fight back. These are the same people who are attacking foreigners.
It's still one of my all-time favorite quotes, and it fits into so many contexts that I bump into or we see today. It was Obama, I've said it once before, when Obama was being pinned for his birth certificate, and yeah, he simply said, "Let us not get sidetracked by sideshows and carnival barkers." Says focus. Focus.
Carnival barkers.
Let's carry on, because that's what all of this is. And as we lead up to the polls and as we move and progress as a country, let's not be sidetracked by these sideshows and carnival barkers. People will be trying to wave their fancy outfits and show us how to juggle. That's not our focus. We have a long road ahead. That's like what that. We should be focusing on.
I like that. I saw you you posted something yesterday about the new mayor of Chicago.
Quite interesting.
Yeah, tell me about her.
Quite interesting. Lori Lightfoot.
Yes.
Firstly, let's just have a moment with the name.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then we'll be adult and
that's
move
a, that's
faster.
A good name.
Lightfoot.
Yeah, she sounds like a magical character from like Lord of the Rings. Here is Lori Lightfoot, the elf queen.
I had to play around with it in my mind a bit, like, okay, Mayor Lightfoot, Mayor.
Because Rahm Emanuel's obviously stepping down, right? Because it's election time. So she's coming in as the new mayor.
And yeah, she's the first black woman as a Chicago mayor and also first publicly out leader. So she's lesbian.
Is she a lesbian as well?
Yeah, yeah.
So she's got the trifecta. She's black, she's female, and she's lesbian.
Look, if she were to,
ching, ching, ching.
I know we don't like discussing labels on the show, but if she were to get, you know, bump herself and get into a wheelchair.
Because she's in Chicago, what is her take on Jussie Smollett?
I don't know.
That's the most important thing about her.
I was also cringing at the thought there, but, you know, this is the truth that I notice in society. As much as we like to say we move and we change and we're very honest about things,
sure,
sometimes we need a shock to our system to be able to change who we are. And I think for someone like this, it isn't just, oh my gosh, you're black, and oh my gosh, you're lesbian, and so we'll rally up. But I think it's the fact that, yes, she's qualified and she's enabled and she now has this new position.
I liked her because I heard her speech. That's why I'm asking.
Yeah.
I don't give two shits, again, whether someone's a lesbian or whether they're black or whether they're female. That doesn't interest me. If you're going to do the job properly, I'm thrilled. She sounds smart.
To me, in this context, it matters because 50 years from now, we'll be able to look back at this point and say,
that was when Chicago changed. But there are a whole lot of... Okay, so first of all, there have been... New York and Washington have both had... They had black mayors in the 70s. Okay, so the black thing isn't new.
Right.
There are a lot of gay mayors. I know that Houston had a gay mayor 8 years ago, I think it was. Female gay mayor. And then one of the Democratic candidates, a guy called Pete Buttigieg, he's a gay mayor of a small Midwestern town.
Right.
And he's one of the candidates for the Democrats for president. And he's been mayor there for a little while, so that's nothing new either. So gay and black aren't a big deal, but the combo obviously is. And
especially in the state of Illinois.
Well, no, the state of Illinois is one of the most left-leaning states in the country.
But with Chicago and the connotations that carries within and around the black community, I really do think this is a game changer.
Good, good.
And it's more than just...
I think her speech made a lot of sense. I'll see if I can find it.
Right. For you. And it's more than just the rare incidents. You know, I think one of the great effects of Obama being in the White House, for example, is creating that new normal of redefining things. It's not just, maybe one day there will be the possibility that, you know, X type of person could be in the White House. But it's just this normal of saying anyone can be. Mm-hmm. And
remember, according to the theme song, anyone can also be a lesbian.
Okay.
So let's celebrate that.
I heard Cheryl and Mary say,
again, a victory for lesbians. I like to record these as a big supporter of the lesbian community, as you know.
Sure. Okay.
So whenever a big deal happens for the lesbian community, my people, I try to play this song.
Lesbians are your people?
That's right. Okay. Listen to this.
They all sing. It's a pleasure to be a lesbian.
That's right.
Lesbian. Lesbian.
Okay.
Lesbian. Lesbian.
lesbian.
So all sweet. Right, very nice. Weird Lori Lightfoot fact. Yes. She shares the same birthday as Obama.
Oh,
I'm not like saying that, anything. Huh? I don't know what it means. I just noticed it very interestingly as well when I was reading up on her.
All right, good. Mm. Well, let's see how she does. As I said, I'm more curious about her stance on Jussie Smollett, because that's the big reason Chicago's been in the news in the last couple of weeks. Okay, let's get into
five
some
things
stories
that you need to know.
Yes, where do you want to begin? Oh. I'll give you some options. Okay. You choose one. Option number one, Ace Magashule. Option number two, Facebook. Option number three, Baby Daniel. Option number four, Eskom. And option number five, predictions around the weather, which sounds boring, but it's important. I'll tell you why.
Well, it's a Thursday where we focus on politics. So let's start with Ace.
Ace. All right. So
we got that book delivered.
Yeah, I got
that. That was trending over the weekend.
Right. Peter Louis Myberg's book, which is called Gangster State, Unraveling Magashule's Web of Capture, because he's like one of the kingpins in the state capture movement. Wasn't he your premier?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
Pinky.
Pinky's premier from the Free State.
Did you campaign for him? Did he ever knock on your door?
I'm even scared to talk.
Yeah. Now, everybody in the...
This is something.
Yeah, this is the book. The book is all about how people in the Free State are scared of this guy. He's powerful. He's very connected. And he's not afraid to use underhanded means to get ahead. Anyway, so we won't put Pinky on the spot, or she might not have a house when she gets back home.
Jeez.
But Ace Magashule is the focus of this book by Peter Louis Myberg, which arrived yesterday here at our office, and we'll be talking to him at some point about that too. The ANC, in the meantime, have said they will retract the statement they issued in the wake of allegations of state capture leveled against Ace. In the book, they allege that Magashule, during his time as Free State Premier, tapped into the proceeds of a contentious 230 million rand asbestos audit deal awarded by Provincial Human Settlements Department in 2014. In a three-page statement on Sunday, the ANC said the allegations were an attempt to deface the organization, but they've done an about turn.
Mm-hmm.
In an interview with Cape Talk's Kino Kamies on Wednesday, ANC spokesperson Dakota Lehoate said after the consultation with the party's leadership, it would retract the statement, adding there was an orchestrated media campaign against the ANC. No, guys, there's no media campaign. You fucked up so much, it's hard for the media to turn and face the other way. There's a wall of shit coming down around the ANC. It's not a media campaign.
And you aren't the victims here.
No, you cannot do this. You cannot say that
you
some
really aren't.
That Ranjeni Moonsami or Karima Brown or, in this case, Kino Kamies are coming at you. There's no media campaign against you, ANC. The media have, if anything, been propping you up with this bullshit Ramaphoria for how long? They've bought that. They gave Zuma way too much rope when I was writing my letter to government back in 2010.
Mm. Almost 10 years ago.
Media were horrified that I would say things about President Zuma being potentially the worst guy to come and take control of the presidency. Everyone said, oh, how can you say that? I had calls from the presidency saying, oh, you know, the rest of the media aren't with you. Because they weren't. You're a bunch of craven people in the media. Kino Kamies interviews this dude. He basically does an about turn and then adds, oh, and there's a media campaign against us. No. No one's actually, it doesn't need to be orchestrated. You have created such a mess that people don't have to create media stories about you. They just have to observe the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of this Ace Magashule, there's a book. It's fat. It's a fat book. It's like a 10 centimeter thick book. Okay, maybe that's an exaggeration. 5 centimeters thick. It's a big, fat book.
It's like 2/3 of a Harry Potter book.
Easily.
Yeah.
And this is all just about Ace.
Pinky's person.
So he said, this guy, please don't insult Pinky. I mean, it's not fair. We have consulted with our leadership as well as the officials of the ANC, and I will issue a statement to retract what we said on this particular matter. So maybe the ANC is turning on Ace. Or else they can't decide what their position is on anything. Maybe their heads are up their backsides again. and they don't know what to say. So that's the Ace Magashule story. In other news, this is quite important, especially if you're planning some things over the weekend. Apparently, there are extreme weather conditions predicted throughout the country with major thunderstorms and heavy rains. A cold front is expected in many parts of the Western Cape on Thursday, which means it'll hit the rest of the country over the days after that. The provinces affected will include the Northwest, the Free State, as well as Gauteng. Forecaster Kumsa Masizana said, "We have some isolated thunderstorms over the central parts of the country." Wait, let me do this like a weather person.
All right.
"We have isolated thunderstorms over the central parts of South Africa, but scattered and now going into parts of the Free State and the Northwest and the eastern parts of the Northern Cape, as you can see." Yeah. And I'm doing the hand gesture.
I was going to explain that as well. Thank you. Wow. You might have a career.
Yeah, sure.
You might have a career.
I don't
with
look
this
like
one.
I look. Horrible story, you know, about this baby Daniel. We spoke about it when the court case began. High Court in Johannesburg has finally reached a point of sentencing, and they've ordered that the guardians of the slain baby Daniel be put on the child protection register. They've sentenced the 3-year-old's mother to 20 years in prison, while her boyfriend was handed a life sentence. Do you remember what happened here? Baby Daniel's body was found at his home in Natcharina, south of Johannesburg. He had suffered severe bruises and 60% burn wounds. This poor little child was abused so badly. Nearly 3 years after baby Daniel was tortured to death, his guardians have been handed hefty sentences. And we have to stop pretending that we have sane, sensible, decent people. There are also sick sacks of shit in South Africa who would do this to a child. These are not people. If you do this to a child, you don't qualify as a person anymore. Who in their right mind would be able to do what these people did to this child? So they're going to jail for a very, very long time. And people are mostly happy a family member of baby Daniel's murderer took down banners of activist group and women, groups of men and women outside the High Court. Now, this I don't understand. So apparently, one of the family members of the murderers was taking down posters outside. And they were brazen about it. They didn't cover their faces. They were pulling down posters that Women and Men Against Child Abuse put up. And they're tearing down these posters. Now, that person is also sick in the head. If one of my family were accused of doing this to a child, I'm afraid I would have to choose the child over my family. You can't be a good person if you support your family in the light of these. And by the way, these people have now been convicted and sentenced by a court of law. It's not out there in... This is beyond a reasonable doubt.
It's not the court
stuff.
Process, yeah, this and is not, still yeah. might be up in the air.
This is after sentencing, and this guy's pulling down posters. What a sick family this is. They should all be chased into the sea. Eskom has unveiled a winter plan. Are you excited?
They make it sound like, you know, so exciting, like the fall winter collection.
Yeah. I saw yesterday there's this headline like, "Tomorrow Praveen," this is yesterday's story, "Tomorrow Praveen will address us on what the situation is with Eskom." I was like, wow, that's exciting. What's he going to tell us? So what he's told us is there's a winter plan for South Africa to ensure optimal supply for the next 5 months. He held a briefing along with utilities executives Bagamani Khadebe and Jabu Mabuza. They presented an overview of the country's electricity state and what needed to be done to address the crisis. Eskom's plan includes executing proper maintenance. Oh, now?
Oh, please.
Now, after how many years of not doing proper maintenance? Oh, you know what? We're going to do some proper maintenance to reduce plant breakdowns and regular communication with all role players. Gordon said they aimed to avoid load shedding. Well, yes, that's the least you can do. Since we're paying for this, we're not getting it for free. It's not a bonus. This is what we pay for when we're not already paying for your taxes. At the same time, Eskom systems operator, responsible for balancing the grid, Bernard Mohoro, presented two possible scenarios for the coming winter. He says, just to explain how we got to the scenario, we will prioritize maintenance this winter. This is critical. We will work with available capacity to meet demands. Eskom said that while the immediate priority was to keep the lights on during the cold months ahead, a longer-term plan would be put in place to address South Africa's power needs.
Gareth, as a citizen of this country, how does this make you feel? Does this, you know, keep hope alive with Eskom? Does it make you feel like you're in great hands?
I don't feel any. I feel numb. When any of these ministers speak, I feel nothing. My brain says to me, you must ignore these people. They don't care about anyone in this country. And they certainly don't care about you, Gareth.
At least your brain is evolved. We're still clinging on to hope and this it
is
gets...
But this is the problem, right?
Smashed.
I was talking to someone about this yesterday, and it's a slight trajectory we're going down here, but this is worth maybe discussing.
Okay.
The biggest problem with so many of us is that we allow our feelings to dominate instead of our thoughts. Your thoughts are rational, sensible. They help you to figure out the world around you and make calculated, rational decisions. And on a balance of probabilities, don't believe all this shit that if you follow your gut and you trust your feeling, that that's always going to take you in the right place. Mostly, science has shown, and under laboratory conditions, they test these things, trusting your gut is probably the worst thing you can do. Because people's guts let them down. Your guts does. You know what you're trusting your gut? Do you know when that's your intestines and your stomach? They don't have a brain.
What are you saying? You're probably just hungry. Eat a snack.
Yeah, trusting your gut is. Yeah, it's a stupid idea. Okay, and don't get all uptight with me when I say this. Like I'm not one of those people. I'm also a feely person. I'm not just a thinky person. All right, but you've got to balance the two. A lot of people wake up in the morning and they let all their decisions fall to their feelings. If your life is shit and that's how you live, stop doing it. Apply your brain. Think rather than feel. So when I think about government, I don't feel. These are not people that you get a feeling from. Unless you have absolutely nothing else in your life and you've had horrible experiences throughout. And these people look like they care about you and you fall for that, then fine, I can't help you. But don't feel, think. Final story.
That's
for
today's quote.
That's right. Or at least balance it out. Feel a little bit and think a little bit. Because if you're just feeling, I'm pretty sure your life's 90% horrible. And then you can't blame other people. Facebook Inc. said on Wednesday that it had removed public databases containing its user data on Amazon.com's cloud servers after cybersecurity firm UpGuard discovered millions of exposed records. What this is basically about, I mean, that's the most boring story in the world. Rewind that and listen to it again and see if you can stay awake. Right, I'll give you a minute. This is a podcast. You can always rewind. Basically, Facebook keep screwing up by letting people's data fall into the wrong hands. They're exposing you. This is a good reason to not put stuff on Facebook that will compromise you. Don't put pictures on there of yourself drunk at a party.
But now anything, don't put everything up can be used against you.
Some political statement that, you know, one day when you feel differently because you've learnt a bit, you're going to regret. Don't revenge porn your ex on Facebook. You know, these are bad ideas because, first of all, it's a bad idea to do any of that anyway. But to let Facebook have the data, that's way more dangerous. Mark Zuckerberg is the last person you should trust.
I'd love to see their numbers over the past couple of months and the decline.
Well, in America, they are in retreat. Facebook is not growing anymore. It's actually declining.
To no surprise.
Yeah, it's in single-digit figures, so it's still small because a lot of old people have only just, believe it or not, now discovered Facebook. So a lot of old people are starting to,
hang on, I could connect with my friends in some other country.
Yeah.
So the old motherfuckers are starting to discover Facebook. But young people are leaving in their droves.
Yeah, and it still has more than the other major social networks, so Twitter and Instagram. Facebook still somehow has the sense of community.
Yeah, it's more community.
And that's why it still does work for just Aunt Thelma who wants to find out what her family's doing.
Hey, speaking of which, how's that aunt of yours who wears a dressing gown and walks around with like a beer in her hand? How's she doing?
Tabitha.
Yeah, how's Tabitha? I want to meet this woman. She live in KZN?
Yes.
What a pity. I'd love to have her in the studio.
Oh, man. I haven't seen her in a while, actually. She just called my mother probably 2 weeks ago. She's like, yo, like, I need all of my Tupperware back from you.
She's doing a reclamation of Tupperware. Is she on Facebook? She must be.
Oh, no. No? She's too preoccupied with the tavern down the street.
Oh,
okay. Tabitha. She's too busy.
All right, that's all the news you need to know this morning. We've got the burning platform, so if you're in the mood for more news later on, we've got a couple of interesting things happening there and something new in the burning platform today. So
different perspectives with the burning platform this morning. Yes. That's something different.
But what have you got for us in Said by Sia this morning?
Well, it's quite apt that we reference Tabitha with her drinking. She probably needs a new kidney. So are you ready for a bit of a story time this morning?
Sure, go for it.
How sweet is this? A nurse who drove kidney transplant patients 800 kilometers through the night just so that these patients can get life-saving surgery. It's incredible. So, story time. This is a South African nurse, by the way. This all took place in Port Elizabeth. A nurse made it possible for two patients to finally receive their life-saving gift of a kidney after years of being on the waiting list. Now, you know, if we have heard anything about being an organ donor in any way, shape, or form, you always hear of these long waiting lists and how people are often struggling with ill health up until the point when they can get some sort of a donation. And so, in this hospital in PE, two patients finally received the call that donor kidneys were available. One of the patients is 25-year-old Callie Williams, and another patient has remained anonymous. And they were asked to go to Cape Town. It happened a few weeks ago in March. They were alerted at late in the afternoon, like 6 p.m., and they realized that they're only 30 minutes left up until the final flight from PE to Cape Town.
Sure.
So they're like, shucks, we won't make it in time.
And they've got an organ now. They've got to get this kidney there.
Exactly. Yeah. And given the state of their health as well, they can't wait like, oh, yeah, we'll have the surgery in a week's time.
Mm-mm.
So this is when one of the nurses stepped up. So kudos to Salome Seibritz, who's a national renal care nurse working in Port Elizabeth. She heard about this and she said, screw it, I'm going to drive both of you down to Cape Town. Now, I don't know about you and if you love road trips or not, but 800 kilometers is no freaking joke. But she said, look, I understand the situation. I understand what both of these patients are going through. And so we are not going to waste any more time. Get into the car. Let's all drive down.
And they put the kidney in a cooler box. And
well, the kidney was in Cape Town.
Oh,
and they had to get the
patients
there. Yeah. Oh. So that's extra responsibility.
Did they have to put them in a cooler box? They're all right.
I don't want to. Please don't drag me down that road. I don't want to do that.
Give us the big happy ending. They got the kidneys?
Absolutely. They were able to make it. They drove all the way through the night, and they made it to Cape Town 30 minutes before the first surgery was scheduled. And so both patients were able to get kidneys and had successful surgeries. But this is also testament to the medical team in Port Elizabeth as well. They heard that the nurse Salome Seibritz was doing this. They all started to chip in money, you know, just like some petrol money for the way. They raised so much money that she was able to drive down with the patient. But on top of that, there was money left over that Salome actually said, screw it as well, I'm going to buy flights for the patients once they've recovered to fly back to PE. So I mean, what a sweetheart. So Salome Seibritz, wherever you are in PE, kudos to you and the rest of the medical team who is working in the National Renal Care Facility to make things happen and to prioritize your patients in this way.
That's fantastic.
That's your sit by for
nice,
this morning.
What a nice story.
I always raise these stories up, not because, you know, of course it's great to hear, but at the same time, I think these are extraordinary people.
They are.
And I know the medical team, you have to, what is it? You do that pledge to say you'll always help where you can, and right? Something along those lines. Like a doctor has to do a
Hippocratic oath.
What?
First, do no harm.
Mm-hmm.
And your duty is to the patient.
That one.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I would drive 800 kilometers.
No, that is a big ask. But those are good people. And there are good people. Thank goodness there are, because they balance out the terrible people. So in the end, we all end up average.
Right.
But thank heavens for people like that. All right. I got this note from somebody who said, this is Claire. She said, hey, guys, have you heard about that convicted sex offender? It's a guy called Johannes Petrus Cordia. He escaped from the Nigel prison yesterday. And I advise everyone to hop on the internet and Google image Johannes Petrus Cordia. Have you looked him up? Scary looking guy this. Huh? Imagine him knocking on your door going, and he's a sex offender.
Okay, how do we best describe him horrible?
I'll describe him.
But honest.
He's got a thick neck, like that guy Thick Neck who was arrested in America.
In Chicago, I think.
Okay, so Johannes Petrus Cordier, he's got a big thick neck. He's got a little bit of a beard. He's got a nose that looks like a blob of plasticine was just thrown at his face.
And very flat.
Wherever it landed, it just stuck. It's not so much that it's flat, it's just huge and broad. And he's got these creepy eyes, and he's like slightly balding. And this is a sex offender. And Claire says, I saw a picture of that guy yesterday. I don't know about you, but I was confronted by that tree trunk of a neck. And if I saw him in a dark alley, I would wish the earth would swallow me whole. Peace and love, Claire.
So the Department of Correctional Services actually say that they can't explain how Johannes escaped just yet.
Well, of course, because how did he get that thick neck through the prison bars, right?
They say there's an investigation currently underway. And the official statement from Zandile Mabunda from the Department of Correctional Services is, the circumstances relating to the escape will be known once the investigation has been concluded. But according to the department as well, Johannes was sentenced back in 2018 in June to 3 years in prison for sexual assault.
Only 3 years?
Mm. They say, this is the Department of Correctional Services saying, the department is appealing to the public to assist with any information that may lead to his rearrest. Hmm. Do you get charged again if you've escaped?
I think, Pinky, what do we know about this criminal law? Like,
oh man, I keep telling Sia that criminal law is not my.
Okay, well, no, I listen.
But
I mean,
think you do, because he escaped, so right. He's going to be another charge.
And doesn't he start the sentence again? Like. It doesn't count if he's put in a couple of months already.
If I was a judge, he'd start over.
Yeah, well. Have you seen a picture of him?
Yeah, I just saw it now.
Ooh. A good-looking dude, right? All right, so everybody just get on Google and image search. What is it? Johannes Petrus Cordia, Cordier. And if you see that man, if that man comes knocking on your door today, goes, hello, I'm from Eskom, don't open the door.
Is Nigel in the east of Gauteng?
Yeah, it's like northeast, so it's a terrible
like
place.
Further from
no,
the
sorry,
airport.
Southeast. Yeah, it's that way. It's Springs Nigel.
Oh, hi. That's not my territory. Never mind.
Yeah, it's basically where the buses don't run.
Oh no, nothing I have to factor in.
That's where people,
doesn't mean he can't reach you.
That's where people chain their children to the fence, so that they don't get lost.
I don't want to.
It's a bad place.
Look, you can't miss a face like Nigel.
By the way, if you listen to us from Nigel, I'm sorry, but you live in a terrible place. What do you want me to say?
I don't know. Maybe you enjoy sandy hills or something or the other.
Something like that. All right, so a special version of The Burning Platform coming up a little bit later on. We'll also talk about addicts and the protests that are going on there, because they've affected loads of people in Johannesburg, including our own Jane Malachi. And we'll be gearing up to the election, so we have been bombarded by so many political voices. And I think we should shine the light on some other voices that are maybe more worthwhile listening to. So we'll speak to two people in The Burning Platform, and we'll find out from the IEC what they're up to as well. All right, so loads of stuff for you to look forward to. CliffCentral.com. It is Thursday morning? The 4th of April.
You have to
already.
Think about that for two
well,
seconds.
You know, sometimes these things don't come easy to me. Like I said, I didn't do well at maths.
Days of the week and maths?
But okay. Well, I was counting like how many days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, four. Okay, Thursday, yeah.
This is CliffCentral.com.